Welcome to Cider Chat. In this episode, we're going to be hearing about how to grow quince. It's a new initiative put on by the Vermont Quince Company. And the featured speaker is none other than renowned horticulturist Zeke Goodman.
Going up, going up.
Hello, my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world.
Hip, hip, hooray!
There are over 250 episodes, which you could find at the archive pages at ciderchat.com. And while there, make sure to sign up for the Cider News. And you'll also find some donate buttons to keep this podcast on the air and a link to the Cider Chat Patreon page. Because without the patrons, this podcast would really be struggling to go online. And recently, there's been just such good cheer as we were celebrating season 6. And truthfully, in the Cider House, we celebrate that all year long because, well, that's what cider's about, celebration and good cheer. So go ahead and press that subscribe button to this here podcast now, because the train is rolling out to Ciderville, and we want you to come along and join the fun.
Walking through the orchards.
If you're a commercial maker, I could bet without a doubt that one of your key goals, besides making quality cider, is to sell it. Right? I mean, that's the way the cidery works, is you make cider to sell cider and you continue that cycle. You get into the groove of the apples on how they change each year. Maybe you start working with some other varieties. Maybe you're incorporating some pears. Maybe you're going with peri pears. I mean, it's just a beautiful thing. That is why people become commercial makers, because it's a contagious hobby that grows into a passion. And, you know, there you are, making cider commercially. So the next step is, well, how do you get that cider out into the market? And there's one key way, actually one key competition that I've been talking about for the past 2 years, and now the third annual New York International Cider Competition is rolling out once again in 2021. The competition itself takes place on February 21st in New York City. So now is the time to start sending your ciders out in the post, because we know that it's a little wonky out there and you don't want to delay. Because the key thing about this particular competition is that the judges are retail buyers, right? You see the relationship, it just makes so much sense to get it out in front of these folks. And they are the ones who, as the world starts opening up, will be saying, hey, yo, send me some of your cider so I could get it out there into the world and to my customers. That is just a beautiful thing. You know, that just like fills my heart with such good cheer. Just imagining all the makers out there listening. Yes, I'm talking about you right now. Feeling good knowing that, yeah, there is a market for your cider. I mean, poo, that is what it's about. So do it now. Check out NYICiderCompetition.com. That's the New York International Cider Competition. And thanks, Adam, for once again helping to sponsor Cider Chat. It's now time for the Q&A with Fermentis. We're doing an ongoing Q&A with Fermentis, which has yeast and fermentation solutions for all of us who love to make cider. And this week's question is, what Fermentis yeast culture is best for creating a dry finish to my cider? I typically use a blend of apples that are high in acid and very low in tannin. And once again, we'll be hearing from Kevin Lane.
Hello, my name is Kevin Lane, and I'm the technical sales support manager for the Americas for Fermentis. For dry ciders, we really have couple of strains available in our Safcider portfolio, one being Safcider AB1 and the other being Safcider AC4. For those of you that are familiar with Fermentis's products, Safcider AB1 is the original Safcider from the years past. It's just been renamed AB1. So that's going to produce a very dry cider in most, almost every condition. is very suitable for difficult fermentation conditions and any sugars or syrup additions. It is also sensitive to the killer status and has a average, maybe on the low end of average, ratio of yeast available nitrogen to sugars demand for fermentation. Really going to be a well-balanced yeast impact on the flavor profile. The other option is Saff Cider AC4, which is ideal for all types of sweet and dry ciders from fresh or concentrated apple juices. The strain provides a delicate aromatic profile, combining fresh apple and elaborated fruit, again, kind of the applesauce notes, with balanced mouthfeel, respecting the cider structure. The two of these strains really are going to be creating a dry cider in the end. The AC4 is killer, just so you're aware. That is a killer strain and has a fairly average ratio demand for yeast available nitrogen and sugars.
Kevin's talking killer strains by Fermentis. And what he means by that are strains of Saccharomyces cerevisiae. And they have what is called a killer factor, which means they are resistant to infection by other yeast. Who would have thought that a guy who sounds so technical would be talking about killer strains? Do you see like a mystery novel in the making there? I do. Absolutely. Once again, that was Kevin Lane from Fermentis answering the question for all of us on what yeast to use for dry cider. And again, the two yeasts he's recommending are AB1 and AC4. Find out more at fermentis.com. And now it's time to grab a glass and get ready for our featured presentation. On this here episode 252, it's all about the hashtag Grow Quince, and this is part one on planting tips. A little bit on the backstory. In late 2019, the Vermont Quince Company was awarded a USDA-funded specialty crop block grant program. And this was funded through Vermont Agency of Agriculture, Food, and Markets to support commercial and backyard growers by compiling and disseminating resources and expertise about growing quince in New England. The hashtag Grow Quince is all about helping to spotlight this forgotten fruit. Next, we'll hear from the founder of Vermont Quince Company, Nan Stefanik, and then we'll go to Ezekiel Goodban, who is better known as Zeke. Now make sure that glass is ready, and I hope you have a little bit of quince in there if you are lucky enough, because you are in for a treat.
Hashtag Grow Quince is a grant-funded project to consolidate what's known about growing quince in New England, and particularly looking at what we're all learning about different varieties of quince, which ones are, maybe more fire blight resistant or deer resistant, which ones are better suited for whether your zone is 5A like here, or in terms of bloom time, like we're starting to learn that there's different varieties that we can harvest in mid-October, whereas others that are planted in this region, it gets to be November 1st, and at most 40% of the quince are ripe on the tree. So part of this grant program is just, okay, what do we know about what? There's different information that's online about how much moisture that they like. We're seeing it just as a first stage of gathering information, finding out what resources that do exist online, making that available, digitizing it for a podcast. So Zeke Goodman, what I've asked him to do is to tell the story of why did he first get interested in quince and why did he start planting it. He's the current horticulturalist at Champlain Orchards. Spent 20 years as the orchard manager at the Special Scott Farm right here in Dummerston, Vermont, where he planted at least three varieties, and he'll be talking a little bit about, or a lot about that. And then previous, he also was involved in introducing quince to Allison's orchard, which is the source of almost all of the quince that Vermont Quince uses for its production. Like, you know, my kind of secret mission is to establish this tri-state region as the quince capital of New England. But a large part of that goes to foundational efforts that Zeke has made in this region. I've asked him to say in a little more detail than he's comfortable doing, but thank you, Zeke.
You know, I came across some old orchards and made deals with people that I would prune their trees, take care of them in exchange for whatever I could harvest back in the mid-1970s when I lived in Maine. And that's where I found some old varieties, some Roxbury russets and blue pearmains and sheep's nose and Ben Davis. And I'd grown up with Red Delicious. And so these were life-changing flavors for me, tasting those apples. And I knew people who'd grown up in my generation with Wonder Bread and Red Delicious apples and Velveeta cheese would also love to try these very different flavored apples. So I started the nursery from cuttings from those old orchards. And we, my young family and I, we moved around northern New England and would bring our nursery stock with us wherever we ended up. We had a big old station wagon. We'd put the kids in the back seat, the geese behind them, and then the nursery stock in the very back. So I ended up at Allison's maybe, how many years ago? 40 years ago or something. Most orchards in New England were growing Macintosh for the fresh market. And with everyone growing the same perishable variety, it's sort of like being in the dairy business. Where you are at, you have no control over the prices. You take what price is offered. So growers in the 1980s, 1990s really weren't making back the cost of production. And so while Allison's was mostly Macintosh, I had this stash of Roxbury russet and Baldwin's and blue pearmains growing on the side. The owners of Allison's were pretty good business people, and they recognized that, oh, this was an opportunity. So I began grafting over these Macintosh trees to these varieties. And so when we went to the stores with boxes of blue pearmains, we were able to tell the store what the price would be rather than the store telling us what the price would be. And so with that model, we looked towards other fruits that we could grow. And we had a good relationship with some of the culinary markets in the Boston area and some of the food writers actually Julia Child. We went into areas of fruit growing that would be especially enticing to these restaurants and food markets. And of course, quince was one of those, as were apple varieties like Cavie Blanc or Bramley Seedling or some of the great strudel apples like Belle de Bosco. So my Swedish grandmother had grown quince, so I knew about quince from her. And I didn't see anybody else growing quince. And so whenever I would see or come across some fruit that no one else was growing, I'd like with Belle de Bosco, I knew that I could corner the strudel market in New England by growing Belle de Bosco and have all the strudel makers lined up in advance for the Belle de Bosco. So I figured, oh, I can get the quince, everyone who wants quince, coming to our door. And of course, there weren't that, you know, other than my Swedish grandmother, you know, there weren't that many people looking for quince at the time. But, you know, more people, some articles were written. And gradually over, you know, since that 24 years ago, more awareness of quince has come along. And of course, NAN has done a good job in bringing it to more people's attention. So we began planting quince at Allison's. When I moved a couple years later over to Scott Farm, the first year I was there, aside from grafting over the orchard to other apple varieties, I began planting quince there. And so some of the varieties that I planted there, well, Champion was one variety. Let me know if you're not, if you're interested
no,
in certain, or, but Champion was one variety. It produces a very large quince that's very good for cooking and everything you'd want to do with quince. And that came from a nursery called Trees of Antiquity, from another nursery called Rain Tree or One Green World. They carry quince. And I got some quince from them, probably some of the ones that you have growing here with the difficult to pronounce names. What are they? Kagansuga and Aromatica or something. Those.
Aromataya.
Yeah. So those two. I added those. And another year later, I planted Van Damen and Orange. Also planted Smyrna. And, you know, the soil, both at Allison's and Scott Farm in Dummerston, are glacial loams. They're very well-drained, rich soils. And so the quince thrive there. And it's zone 5 or 5A. It was 5, now it's 5A. Probably be zone 6 pretty soon. So they did very well. They arrived bare root, very easy to plant. They would be similar to a semi-dwarf apple tree in terms of size. So the spacing would be dictated by, you probably want to plant quince no more than 15 feet to each other, but they could be planted further apart if you wanted. You could grow them on a dwarfing pear rootstock and put them a little closer if you wanted to do something similar to the high-density apple plantings. But if you just order some quince from a nursery, you'll probably get quince that's grown on a quince rootstock and need to give them a little space. Full sun is best for quince, although they can be grown as an understory tree for windbreaks or something. But so planting them, the more care that you give them those first years after you plant them, the sooner you'll get cropping, the better your trees will grow. So planting them and forgetting about them for a couple of years isn't a good approach. There's a saying that it's the eye of the farmer that fattens the cow. And so paying attention to your quince will lead to a more productive tree. So other than watering and keeping an eye on them those first couple of years, ensuring that the soil is fertile and well-drained, they don't require a whole lot of more care. They naturally have a spreading growth habit. And so unlike some apple varieties where we have to tie, or pears where we have to tie down branches to form the tree, you can pretty much let quince go and the form will be good and make good use of sunlight. We generally don't start pruning for several years. There's a saying that the best thing you can do for your partner who's new at growing trees is to hide their pruning shears for several years. And so that's a good thing to keep in mind with planting new quince trees. Generally, we'd start to get some initial production, some fruiting, maybe 3 years after planting. Insect and disease. Quince are probably the easiest fruit tree to grow and get fruit. If you plant quince trees and can't get fruit, then you should probably look to another line of work. Where apples, you know, growing them commercially requires some inputs, you know, some, you know, sprays, whether they're organic or IPM. Quince don't require, there are no fungal diseases that are a big issue in producing healthy quince trees or marketable fruit. There aren't any insects that really bother quince other than Japanese beetles skeletonizing the leaves. And you can deal with those with Japanese beetle traps or just hand picking, depending on how many acres of quince you have. There's a little issue with powdery mildew, but that's sort of a minor problem in a dry year. And so nothing that we would ever bother with trying to control. Let me see. The one issue with quince that is a major issue is fire blight. And that's a bacterial disease. And it wasn't that much of a problem around here when I started growing fruit around here. But, you know, in tracking degree days every year, we've seen that the springs warm up earlier than they used to, and it stays warmer in, later into the fall. So average springtime temperatures in May, when quince would be in bloom, are higher than they used to be. And that's those are conditions that fire blight, the fire blight bacteria likes. So quince, when they do bloom, they're one of the later blooming fruit trees. Apples around around this area of Vermont and New Hampshire, you know, peaches and plums usually bloom the first week of May. And then, you know, the old saying is 10 days later, the apples will start to bloom. So around the 10th, 11th, or 12th of May, apples begin to come into bloom and you have your first blooming apples. Some of the late blooming apples like Northern Spy or Kingston Black or blooming more towards the 15th to the 20th of May. But then quince comes along blooming towards the end of May. You know, by Memorial Day, they'll still be in bloom most years. And by then, the temperatures are usually T-shirt weather, whereas beginning of May sometimes, you know, you can still have your long, I certainly do have my long underwear still on. So the apples can usually get through fire blight season, but the quince are more vulnerable. Fire blight, the bacteria, enters the vascular system of the tree through an opening in the system. And so that is either a wound from hail damage, or the blossom of the flower, which is an opening into the vascular system of the tree. So if a bee or raindrop splashes this bacterium onto a blossom or onto a wound, enters the vascular system. And if the temperature is warm enough in the 70s, high 60s to 70s to above that, that allows the bacteria to reproduce very rapidly. It spreads through the vascular system of the tree and causes a wilting and disease and more production of bacteria, which can then spread to neighboring quince. So that's become more of a problem. There's sanitation practices, you know, ruthlessly pruning out any fire blight strikes. It's called fire blight because the branch that's infected will look as though you held a flame underneath the branch and the leaves will wilt and discolor. But so pruning those out on when the weather is dry and taking, removing that wood from the planting and disposing of it outside the orchard is the way to. One way of reducing inoculum, you can spray copper on the trees, while the trees are still just coming out of dormancy, until the leaves have emerged but aren't, because copper is phytotoxic. When the leaves are fully emerged, it's a little late for spraying copper. But before the leaves fully emerge, you can be spraying copper according to the directions on the label of the copper formulation. And the copper is a bacterial side and reduces the bacterial inoculum. Plantings where you don't have any fire blight around, usually you're pretty safe, but there are other trees that are affected by fire blight, some ornamentals. We began to have fire blight at Scott Farm with some nursery stock that came in, some quince that came in that was already infected in the nursery. So every year we're dealing with fire blight strikes and just trying to keep it contained. That's the one hesitation about growing quince. Other diseases, nothing much. Insects, nothing much bothers it. If you're in an area where brown marmorated stink bugs are around, which is usually further south of us, those could possibly be an issue, but they haven't been an issue around here or further north. Pretty easy fruit to grow. Nothing bothers them. Once we get into July and Japanese beetles emerge, putting up some traps or hand picking just so the leaves aren't completely skeletonized. And that's particularly important when you have young quince that you're getting established.
For fire blight, what do? You sterilize your pruning equipment between trees, between orchards, like between blocks? I haven't encountered much fire blight, so I'm just curious.
Right. You don't get, it depends who you ask. So, some people think you should be sterilizing your tools in between cuts. Mm-hmm. And some people say, no, it doesn't matter. But if you're into something that you knew was fire blight, then, yeah, I think that would be prudent to do, to sterilize your tools.
Put them in vinegar? Dilute
bleach?
Maybe
just pour bleach.
Some people, use a dilute solution of bleach. Isopropyl alcohol is easier.
The bleach gives your tools rust.
Right. Yeah. So, isopropyl alcohol.
And if
I'm lambing now, so I have iodine, so I've used iodine too.
Yeah.
On that, would you be more worried about spreading if you were pruning later? Like if you're cutting in the summer, cutting it off, you would be worried then?
Yes. Yeah. And then I carry a bottle of isopropyl alcohol with me so I can sterilize my pruners or saw. And it's important, if you're doing strikes during the summer, pruning those out, getting it out of the orchard, not doing it when it's wet, waiting until it's dry, and getting it out of the orchard or away from your trees.
Quince is easy to grow, or as Zeke Goodban puts it, if you can't grow quince, you might want to rethink your career choice in horticulture or orcharding. Look, Zeke will be back next week in episode 253. That is part two of this Grow Quince series, and he'll be then talking about harvesting quince, propagation, different varieties, and the cracking of the fruit, and also markets for quince. It's really super interesting, and certainly we have our own celeb quince in-house, Mr. Quince.
It's not like I'm Steve Martin.
No, I'm not saying like you're a comedic celebrity. Not yet, of course, but let's face it. Quinces are really having their time right now. This is like the year of the quince, and it just feels like it's not going to stop into 2021.
Well, I hope people grow quince.
Exactly. That's what we're looking for. And, you know, being in the cider house with you, it always smells great.
I think we should move on, Rhea.
Okay, let's do it. The Talking Palms and I would like to wish you a happy solstice and cheers to the light returning. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Berry Pear, are the reindeers all fed?
Working on it, Mr. Quince. The wild yeast are rolling in some oats right now.
Thanks, Pom. It's super chilly outside, but I sure can feel the light returning.
I feel better already.
Me too, Medlars.
Tell that to our friends in South America.
It's the middle of the summer in South America, Perry.
Right. I suppose it is.
Okay, Poms, it's time to head back to the house. Everything looks good here. Let's hop on the east sleigh and head on over. Mr. Quince, can you take the reins?
Roger that.
Perry Pear, let's put the Medlars between you and I and use this big blanket to cover us all.
Thanks, Rhea.
How about one more spin around the orchard to say goodnight to the trees?
I'm on it, Perry Pear.
Okay, let's go.
Bless us, everyone.
You got that right, Medlars.